Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us today, and I think you're going to learn a lot. We're going to be talking about long-term care insurance, which I call anti-poverty insurance, or protecting, covering your assets, a gift to your family, because it's something that nobody wants to talk about it, and everybody needs to think about it. And then at the end of the show, we're going to be talking with Steve Watkins, editor of the Federal Times, and he's going to bring us up to speed on all the many things that are happening on Capitol Hill and within the White House, ranging from proposed pay freezes to elimination of within grades, and you name it, and it's up there, and it's on the calendar. My leadoff guests this morning are Beth O'Brien and Paul Fort. They are with Long Term Care Partners. Is that the correct title?
That's correct.
And you guys run the federal long term care insurance program, and have for several years now. And but before we get rolling about the basics of long term care insurance, how are you doing in rolling?
Mike, we're doing just great. There has been a tremendous expression of interest in the federal long term care insurance program open season, as measured by any one of a number of indicators. Let me just give you a few facts. We've received over 50,000 inbound calls. We have received over 400,000 unique visitors to ltcfeds.com, the website for the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program. We've received downloads of over 38,000 for kit materials. We've had over 45,000 hits to our new award-winning online consultant tool. We've had over 57,000 downloads of open season applications. We've had hundreds of thousands of hits to the rate quote calculator, indicating that people are going on using the rate quote calculator, trying to do some planning. And we've had more than 20,000 people attend a live seminar somewhere in the United States, and another 11,000 attend a webinar. So this indicates to us tremendous interest in open season, people in the federal government understanding their risk for needing long-term care services. They are beginning to understand the impact that long-term care can have on retirement security, as you've said in many of your fine articles. They're doing their homework by using these tools on the website, and they appear to understand very well the value represented by the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program.
Okay, we got some questions that people have emailed in, including one from Pakistan, so an American civil servant on duty there. But I wanted to ask you just sort of the basics, because I have heard people say, I know the answer, and I know they're wrong. But I've heard people say, I have Medicare, I have federal health insurance, I don't need long-term care. But what does long-term care do that they don't do?
Well, very simply, long-term care is designed to help you with those kinds of activities that are oriented to chronic illness and any kind of debility where you can't perform normal activities of daily living, such as bathing, dressing, transferring from a bed to a chair, getting a meal, getting to the doctor's office, that kind of thing. It is not designed to correct an acute health care problem, but rather to help you with those everyday activities because you simply can't do them yourself. Medicare doesn't cover these kinds of services. FEHB doesn't cover them. TRICARE, TRICARE for Life. Those are oriented to short-term acute medical care.
Well, my mother, who would be 91 today, this is her, would be her birthday, was a retired federal worker. She had a civil service annuity. She had Social Security from her other jobs. And I finally persuaded her to buy long-term care insurance maybe 5 years before she retired. Mm. And she was one of these kind of people that didn't like to think about unpleasant possibilities.
Sure.
But she overcame that, thank God, and got this insurance. And as a result, she had an auto accident, and it apparently triggered some kind of dementia. But at any rate, she just went downhill very quickly. Condition lasted about 3 years. She was a totally different person, totally dependent, very confused. You know the type yourself. And the beauty of it, if you will, is that with her other benefits, her civil service annuity, her Social Security, and her long-term care insurance, she had really the best care you can get in the Washington area, which is not a cheap place to get that sort of thing. And she had as much dignity as is possible under the circumstances. And I saw it firsthand as the only child. And my grandchildren, my children and grandchildren were a big help, too. But she made it so much easier for us. It was a gift to us from her. She paid the premiums, but we got it back in spades, and it was just a wonderful thing. So I'm a real advocate of long-term care. Somebody's looking at long-term care insurance, and they say, oh, I'm too young, or I'm really healthy. Beth is a case in point here, glowing health. You don't need long-term insurance, right, do you?
Well, I bought it at 36.
Okay.
The issue, though, with me, though, is not just a magical age. You know, when I made the decision back 5 years ago or so, I realized that I probably wasn't going to have children. I realized that I probably wouldn't have a pension or Social Security, that when the time came, I wanted to self-direct and have my own options when the time came. So at the age of 86, I would have nobody. So personally, I made that decision. We do find most people purchase it, though, when they're in pre-retirement mode, when they have more discretionary income to easily afford the costs, when they're in a position where they've already witnessed what's happened to their parents. They sort of get the concept already. So I think the average age of folks applying during this open season is around 50, 51 or so. So I'm a little bit of an anomaly, but I do have it.
Well, I bought it, I think, in my 40s as well. And I had to check it the other day to have the debiting changed to my checking account. And mine is $86 a month. And that's for a single plan. I'm sorry, I got it through the Washington Post. I guess it's a group plan. But that seems to me, I mean, some people would say that's high. That seems to me to be pretty good for the kind of coverage I got.
Yeah, yes, actually, it is
absolutely.
Pretty good.
Yes.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about my company, too, and I won't name them, but back when I was buying health insurance, you know, many, many years, or long-term care insurance many years ago, a lot of places offered policies. And now the company that holds my insurance does not offer long-term care. They'll honor it. Mm-hmm. They'll take care of me, but they don't offer it anymore. And somebody said that's because so many of these companies have experienced heavier expenses than they thought. And also the cost of care has gone up.
Well, I'm not sure about expenses. What they probably have experienced is higher than expected claims. And that has been the case with some companies. Either because they had rather liberal policies in terms of claim settlement that they didn't really fully think through. As you know, this has also been a very tough investment environment, Mike. The insurers take in money now to pay out claims that will not become due for many years into the future, and they invest those in a variety of different instruments. Many invest them in the bond market, and the interest rate returns have been relatively down over the past 5, 6, 7 years. So that's put strain on the adequacy of premiums. Another factor is that so many people who have bought this program understand, or this product, they understand why they need it, and so they don't drop it. And all insurers make assumptions that a certain number of people who buy a product will perhaps decide that they don't need it after a while. But what happens with long-term care is that people like yourself understand it, they buy it, and then they hold on to it. Some actuaries have made mistakes in terms of the assumptions with respect to how many would lapse. All of these things make long-term care insurance very challenging.
Well, I remember reading, I'm sure it was in a magazine article, and they said that a lot of these carriers had experienced people who were using the insurance earlier than they had assumed they would be using it. And I think you said we were over at Starbucks, and I think you said that's not the case with the government program?
No, actually, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program has had excellent experience from the standpoint of claims. One of the reasons probably is that the federal program required from the beginning at least minimal underwriting for people who were actively at work. In other words, there was no guaranteed issue where people just needed to indicate that they were eligible for the program and they would get it. I think one of the principal reasons for this was that We wanted to make sure that the program would be stable. We wanted to make sure that no one who was about to enter the program could enter it right away and file a claim without having paid his or her fair share of premiums. It's important to recognize, Mike, that unlike FEHB, which has a massive enrollment of millions and which has rates that are set every year, the federal program is a voluntary program. It's financed solely by the premiums of enrollees, and there are no government subsidies. So it's very important that the plan be designed intelligently so as to achieve stability and maintain stability.
Okay, I remember there was a flap, and I can't recall when, but fairly recently when there was a new open season, and some people said they had been told that premiums would never go up, which I find hard to believe. But I wanted to ask you that when we get back from the break here on WFED 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
With vacation time just around the corner, Ackerman Security can help keep families like yours safe and secure. For just $18.95 a month, trust in the protection of Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center and switch your existing system at no cost and that great $18.95 rate. And Ackerman is the only company with a guaranteed response time. Federal government employees get an added bonus. 4 months of monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program open season is here. Did you know that at least 70% of people over age 65 will need long-term care at some point in their lives? Long-term care services are expensive. You may need to rely on loved ones or pay for long-term care services out of your income or assets. Fortunately, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program was designed to help protect against the high cost of care. Open season ends on June 24th. Visit ltcfeds.com to learn more today.
Attention employees of the intelligence community and Department of Defense. Right now, you could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102, contract series 83500. Federal employees. With a two-year pay freeze, rising health care costs, and potential changes to retirement annuity calculations on the way, recent financial events may have you concerned. First Command Financial Advisors understand the federal benefits system and can help you maximize the value of your benefits. Visit federal.firstcommand.com for an office near you and to request a complimentary financial consultation. That's federal.firstcommand.com.
First Command Financial Planning, Inc. Member SIPC and FINRA. First Command is not affiliated with or endorsed by the U.S. government.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Defense Department is releasing its own smartphone application designed to help healthcare providers diagnose traumatic brain injuries. The Mild Traumatic Brain Injury Pocket Guide was designed by the National Center for Telehealth and Technology and includes practice guidelines for assessing and treating service members and veterans who've sustained concussions. For now, the app is available on the Android platform only. There's also a version available in traditional printed paper form.
Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Cybersecurity. Private and government enterprises recognize it as an imperative in today's complex, information-dependent world. So who better than UMBC, a leader in science and technology education and research, to offer a master's and graduate certificate in cybersecurity? Learn more about UMBC's cybersecurity programs and find information about UMBC's upcoming fall semester at umbc.edu/cyber.
Celebrate summer and support the Boys and Girls Clubs at Safeway's Barbecue Battle, June 25th and 26th on Pennsylvania Avenue. This great family event features the nation's best barbecue, along with 30 great rock, R&B, and blues bands, plenty of free food samples, celebrity chefs, contests, prizes, and more. Easy to get to by Metro. Call 202-828-3099 or visit bbqdc.com. See you at the barbecue.
Welcome back to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us today. We're talking initially about long-term care insurance. The open enrollment season in for the federal plan, the federally backed plan, ends next Friday. So you still have time, but not that much time. And you really do need to be thinking about it. Talking here with Paul Fort and Beth O'Brien. They are experts in it, and they are with Long-Term Care Partners, who manage the federal program, affiliated with the federal program. Paul, before the break, I ask you, a couple of years back, there was another open season, and there was a big flap, and Congress stepped in because some people claimed or maybe even produced documentation that they were told or led to believe that the premiums would never go up, which I find mind-boggling that anybody would believe that even if they were told it. But what happened there?
Okay, very briefly, it was not an open season. It was something we call the special decision period. The original contract had ended. As a result of the new contract, it was decided that a new program would be introduced, FELTSIP 2.0, and a rate increase would also be introduced. And there are some people. Now, the program has 225,000 people. A small number of people thought that that premiums could never go up, that they read in the literature that premiums would not increase once you enrolled. I think we could have done a better job with the disclosures. We could have had more indications that premiums can go up. Of course, premiums were never guaranteed. That was never part of it. But a number of these people had taken the automatic compound inflation option. And with that, the premiums are not designed to go up each year, but your benefit goes up. And some people inferred that that meant that they would never go up. So it was very unfortunate. However, we worked out a very good means of helping them to protect themselves. They were given options, and the options included one where they could reduce their inflation adjustment and so avoid the rate increase altogether. More than half decided to move to an option that allowed them to avoid the rate increase. About 43% took the rate increase, accepted the original program, wanted the original program they had. But many moved to the new program, and at the end of the day, we actually had very few complaints. People seemed to have been believed that they had some excellent choices, and they seemed very happy.
Well, that kind of took on a life of its own. Beth, I got my long-term care policy. I got it through the Washington Post group plan. And as it turned out, it was with CNA, and I still have it.
Don't drop it.
Don't know. No. In fact, I had to call them the other day. I'm changing my debit procedures. I want to be sure that I kept it. And my premiums are about $86 a month, and I'm sure the policy is not as good. I don't think it has an inflation feature.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure they offered it back then.
Yep.
But be that as it may, I've got something. You know, yep. I've got, if not a belt and suspenders, I've at least got the belt, you know, and I'm going to keep that. You bought yours at a very young age. Can you discuss what premiums, what people are looking at?
Yep.
I think you said earlier that the typical person seems to buy it around age 50 or 51.
Absolutely. We notice actually during this open season, people are trending towards certain landing spots, so to speak. So for the 50-year-old, we see a lot of people buying the $150 daily benefit amount in the three-year benefit period. And we see about 56% of applicants trending towards the 4% automatic compound inflation option. So basically what I just described was what we call Plan B, a good middle-of-the-road plan. And so a biweekly premium for a 50-year-old for that $150 a day three-year benefit period, benefits increase at 4% compounded annually. That's at $42.21 biweekly for that premium. And that's very, very popular. Other people, additional 40% are choosing the same three-year benefit peer, but they're opting for the $200 daily benefit. So just to give you some perspective, if you up your daily benefit amount, that same 50-year-old would pay about $56.28 biweekly, which is pretty reasonable. And I think when we talk to people, they're actually, when they see the number, they're actually surprised that it is more affordable than they thought.
Okay, and those are biweekly figures.
That is correct.
42 for the 150 daily, 56.28 biweekly for the $200 daily benefit. Do you have lower and higher daily benefits?
We do.
We do.
Yep, absolutely. And if we transition to what we call the very exciting Plan D, mm-hmm. That's actually the $200 daily benefit, but we up the benefit period to 5 years. And, you know, the average length of home care is 4.5 years, so a lot of people are opting for five-year benefits just to give them more flexibility. That biweekly premium would be about $68.92. But then, you know what? Some people don't want the open season to pass them by. They buy what they can afford. So they're looking maybe at the sort of Chevy model that has a two-year benefit period, $150 a day. And again, I'm always quoting the 4% automatic compound inflation, that's about $33.43 biweekly.
But, of course, if you had quoted the future purchase option where you track the offers as we give them to you, and you can either accept or decline them, you would have paid even less.
Oh, absolutely.
You would have paid for that base program, it's $28.49 a month, about $14 for every biweekly. So we're talking a relatively small expenditure to begin to create those suspenders mm-hmm. that you were talking mm-hmm. about, if not the belt, Mike.
What's the minimum coverage you can get, and what's the maximum coverage?
Minimum would be a two-year benefit period, $100 a day daily benefit amount, and
FPL.
The future purchase option yep. inflation. And just for folks out there, the two main cost drivers to the coverage are the age of purchase and how much inflation protection you're building
right.
in.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, and so 2 years, $100 a day is the
minimum,
and the maximum would be the Cadillac would be
$450 a day. You could get it for an unlimited period of time, and you could get the 5% automatic compound inflation adjustment mechanism, and that will cost you considerably more. But what we like to say is that, you know, one size doesn't fit all.
Mm-hmm.
Even as you have a policy that's different from the one that Beth has and the one that I have, people shouldn't think that unless they get the equivalent of the Cadillac plan, they don't have a good plan. It's a little bit like everyone's retirement plan, which is should be unique. It depends on your family. It depends on your resources. It depends on how long you want to work. It depends on the lifestyle that you want to live in, where you want to live. And I think that there are many ways to sort of crack this particular nut. And the reason we have so many options is so that people with different budgets can be accommodated. And I think that many people can be accommodated for the majority of their long-term care service risk through one of these programs. Obviously, they'll have less coverage or less protection with some of the basic programs, more with some of the richer ones. But they'll still have an important basic amount of protection. They'll be a part of the federal long-term care insurance program. They'll have expert care coordination services. They will have oversight by OPM, by the Congress of the United States, by the GAO. They'll have independent third-party claims review should they need it. And there are other features that you can't get anywhere else. And that's what you get even when you take one of the most basic the least expensive plans.
Right, and you're in.
Right.
Yeah, and to me, and I guess it depends on your personality type and a lot of things, but I've talked to some people who view this as an investment, and they say there's not a very good return on it. What if I don't use it? And I think your prayers should be answered
right.
if you don't
use it.
You hope that every penny you've paid in premiums
right.
is wasted.
Right.
It goes
right.
to your company or somebody else's company. But so it's not an investment, is it?
No.
Well, yours would be wasted, but it wouldn't go to our company or somebody else's company. In the federal program, it stays within the Federal Experience Fund so that if you pay your premiums for years and you die, one of your colleagues within the federal family will be the beneficiary of that premium. It will go to pay his or her claim.
Okay, and that's the point, too. It is a group good as a group plan. Need to take a short break here. I'm talking with Beth O'Brien, Paul Fort from Long-Term Care Partners. We'll be right back.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arink.
China hits the U.S. and the Pentagon fires back. The stakes in the shadowy cyber war are growing more and more costly. So, former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger says the two countries are going to have to set some limits. Kissinger told Reuters in his own words, if that doesn't happen, the cycle will likely continue. The Chinese government is suspected of cyber attacks ranging from rudimentary small-scale hacking to broad disruptive assaults on major corporations. I'm J.J. Green.
Estimates show that more than 20,000 airline crew members clear security at our nation's airports each day. Since the beginning of this year, a unique group of 17,500 crew members from 61 different air carriers have been using the Arink Crew Pass service to test a new expedited screening process. This trial program at BWI, Pittsburgh, and Columbia, South Carolina uses three layers of secure data to positively identify each crew member in typically less than 8 seconds. Arink is focused on keeping you moving safely. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Vacation time is just around the corner. Ready to go? Since 1967, Ackerman Security has been keeping families like yours safe and secure. For just $18.95 a month, you can trust in the protection of Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center. Ackerman offers the latest technology like cell phone control, wireless monitoring, and remote video to your web-enabled phone, iPad, or laptop. Federal government employees get an added bonus. 4 months of monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. This week, my special guest is Dr. Alan Dappin, founder of DocTalker.com, a unique healthcare delivery model. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at OFPlaw.com.
What is the U.S. Department of the Treasury doing to implement financial reforms? How is it promoting management and organizational excellence? How is Treasury leveraging technology and innovation to be more efficient and effective? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Dan Tangerlini, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Management and Chief Financial Officer. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Stress. Sometimes a little of it can be a good thing. It can motivate and inspire us. But most of the time, stress is not our friend. Work stress can cause depression, headaches, sleep problems. It can increase your risk of disease and on-the-job injury. At Kaiser Permanente, we believe that stress is serious business. Because when employees are stressed, everyone suffers. So we promote programs that help employees deal with the demands of work and home in healthy ways. Like stress breaks, workplace yoga, stress relief classes, and more. It's a total health approach. That's what Kaiser Permanente does for employers that choose us. Provides tools for companies to keep employees healthy, less stressed, and more productive. Find out how a Kaiser Permanente plan can help your employees and your business thrive. Go to kp.org/thrive9to5.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey, glad to have you with us. And remember, we're here every Wednesday. Wednesday, and our shows are archived. So if you missed part of this, or if you want to hear it again or pass it on to a friend, it is archived on our homepage, and it will be up for grabs tomorrow. I'm talking with Paul Fort and Beth O'Brien from Long-Term Care Partners. Now, next Friday is the deadline for this current open season, and this is an easy the easy questions.
Right.
What's the difference between me signing up this week and next week and signing up in 4 weeks?
Yeah, well, the difference, the benefit of applying during the FELTSIP open season is the short form application. For active federal employees, we ask 7 high-level health questions. And for their spouses or eligible same-sex domestic partners, we ask 2 additional questions for a total of 9. And so it really will never be easier to get the coverage. And the questions are very high-level. For example, we ask, do you currently already live in a nursing home? Do you currently have Alzheimer's disease? Now, most feds can answer no to these. You know, the fact that they show up for work, they're actively employed, speaks volumes about their health. And so we have, upwards of 95 approval rating for the open season?
Yes.
Yeah, which is great. Now, on June 25th, folks can still apply. But it's going to be the 40 health questions on the full form application, in which case at that point we will ask things like, do you have diabetes or have you had cancer or what prescriptions do you take? But right now, until the 24th, we don't ask that stuff.
It's 7 to 9 right now.
Yep.
And it'll be 40.
40.
It's not 20 questions,
no,
but 40
full
questions.
40. Well, going back 10 years, we'll ask everything.
We got an email from Steve, an American who is currently, even as we speak, in Afghanistan working, but he's smart enough to check this out. And he wanted to know what some of the questions are, what some of the deal breakers are.
Well, if you want to go, Paul.
Well, as Beth was saying, if you were to answer that you had Alzheimer's disease, you're asked about MS, MD, Parkinson's. If you answer yes to a question like that, you would not be accepted for coverage. Other questions have to do with whether you're on dialysis, whether you use a stair lift, whether you're in a wheelchair, whether you're in a hospital bed, or whether you've ever been diagnosed with any mental or nervous disorder for which you've been hospitalized in the past 2 years. But note that, and this gets at the whole business of pre-existing conditions, we do allow coverage for many pre-existing conditions, and we recognize that everyone who gets into midlife has some kind of a health condition. And we're not looking for people to be in perfect health. We're looking for people to be of average health for their age. So notice that in the short form, there's no question that asks you whether you have cancer or whether you have diabetes. There's simply no question. If you have those are pre-existing conditions, you can still get into the program. Now, if after this open season period, after June 24, you want to apply, and you can do that, but you will have to fill out that longer form, which Beth has referenced, and that will ask you about those conditions.
Well, the question here from Steve, he says, the only problem with the federal program, unlike the federal health insurance program, long-term care does not allow people with pre-existing conditions to enroll. These are the people who need it but can't get any insurance at a reasonable price. So, but it, as you were saying, this is not like the federal employee health benefits program.
Right. I think the thing to recognize is that we do allow people with some pre-existing conditions to apply using the short form, and they are accepted. It's just that if you have a very serious condition that would make you far more likely than average to need long-term care services and supports in the short term, you're not going to be accepted. Unlike FEHB, which has more than 4 million primary enrollees plus another 5 million dependents, and which has term insurance premiums set every year, and they go up, and which receives a significant subsidy from the federal government, from taxpayers, this program is 100% paid for by the enrollees. Mm-hmm. It's 100% voluntary. And while we have a good number of people, 225,000 now, we expect significantly more as a result of this open season. Still, that's not a number comparable to the millions that are in FEHB, and that's why it's underwritten.
Do you know, have you ever seen numbers as to what percentage of Americans have long-term care insurance? It seems to me it's very low.
Yeah, it is. It depends on which sources you look at, Mike, but the figure that's generally given is about 8 million Americans with some form of private long-term care insurance. Of course, that includes people who bought policies many years ago, people who may not be, you know, as well covered as people are who are in the federal long-term care insurance program. So about 8 million. It's the total long-term care insurance bill is in 2009 was up over $240 billion, and private long-term care insurance pays a relatively modest part of it, somewhere under 10% of that cost, but it's growing each year.
Yeah, I would think with only 8 million, that is not much. Definitely not the number of people that need it.
Absolutely not.
This thing, refer to this as an asset protection, and I know two people who have actually, sort of symbolically, but they have given long-term care insurance their coverage as a gift to their children, mm-hmm. and they say, you know, Merry Christmas. Mm-hmm. I'm buying this policy, but if anything happens to me, this really takes you off a big hook.
Mm. Mm-hmm. It does. I mean, the thing is, like, families will always be there, nights, weekends, but they're supervising the care. They're not rolling up their sleeves and providing it. If you can hire out for that care, bring reputable providers into the home where the patient can still live a wonderful lifestyle in the home setting. Adult children still at work, still have careers, still have their own families. And again, they help out around the clock, but they don't have to help out every single hour of the day.
We've got to wrap it up, but the easy underwriting is next. It ends next Friday, and then you go back to the 40 questions.
That's correct.
Very good. And we'll put your website on our homepage there and everything.
Great.
And if you'll stay tuned, we're going to be talking with Steve Watkins from the Federal Times about what's coming up on the Federal Beat. We'll be right back.
Saronis, Associate Chief Information Officer, Department of Energy, on the Federal Executive Forum on Secure Cloud Computing, sponsored by SafeNet.
Benefits to me are it's forcing an agency to do what it's supposed to be doing with taxpayer dollars and forget about managing the lights and keeping the data up and the internet and that sort of thing. And truly just get in the business of doing what the federal government's about, its services to citizens.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Trust your information in the cloud with SafeNet's data-centric solutions that enable security, privacy, and compliance. SafeNet's solutions allows organizations to share sensitive data throughout the information lifecycle and evolve with changing cloud delivery models. From the battle space to the White House, SafeNet has been at the core of data protection for more than 25 years. Visit safenet-inc.com/government.
Federalnewsradio.com, your source for federal news now.
Attention employees of the intelligence community and Department of Defense. Right now, you could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at geba.com. or call 1-800-826-1126. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102, contract series 83500.
Are you a Federal or U.S. Postal Service employee or an active member of the Uniformed Services? Through June 24th, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program is holding its first open season for new applicants since 2002. Actively at work, Federal and U.S. Postal Service employees and their spouses or same-sex domestic partners and active members of the Uniformed Services and their spouses are eligible to apply with abbreviated underwriting, which means you answer fewer health questions. Learn more at ltcfeds.com.
The Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workspace Sustainability is a series featuring a panel of renowned government and technology industry experts, sponsored by Cisco. During this fifth panel in the series, focused on smart buildings and cloud services, Larry Melton, Assistant Commissioner, Offices of Facilities Management and Services Programs at GSA, commented.
With PBS, and I think Phil alluded to it, one of the things we've done is focused on three strategies. An open system, non-proprietary, converged, and then an ability to normalize that data. In other words, put us in a position to react to that data in real time, at least from the property manager's perspective. That holistic view of the building data and building information, building automation systems, and what the building behaviors are. So we get that in the property manager's hands so they can actually react right away and inform customers. And, quite frankly, customers can actually see through dashboards what's going on in the building, whether it's in a lobby or at their desktops as well.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com. Keyword, work.
Federal employees. With a 2-year pay freeze, rising health care costs, and potential changes to retirement annuity calculations on the way, recent financial events may have you concerned. First Command Financial Advisors understand the federal benefits system and can help you maximize the value of your benefits. Visit federal.firstcommand.com for an office near you and to request a complimentary financial consultation. That's federal.firstcommand.com.
First Command Financial Planning, Inc. Member SIPC and FINRA. First Command is not affiliated with or endorsed by the U.S. government.
Cybersecurity. Private and government enterprises recognize it as an imperative in today's complex, information-dependent world. So who better than UMBC, a leader in science and technology education and research, to offer a master's and graduate certificate in cybersecurity? Learn more about UMBC's cybersecurity programs and find information about UMBC's upcoming fall semester at umbc.edu/cyber.
ACT IAC is looking for a few good members. Do you have what it takes? Are you a techie or a govvie? Do you want to make a positive impact? Can you bring fresh ideas to the table? Join ACT IAC today and help solve government's toughest IT challenges while advancing your career and making great new friends and contacts. To become a member, visit actgov.org. That's actgov.org. Or call 703-208-4800. ACT IAC wants you.
Connect with Federal News Radio wherever you are. Like us on Facebook to see the hottest news stories on your wall. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio. Download our free iPhone app. Just go to the App Store and search for Federal News Radio. And now, connect to the radio station straight from your cell phone. Just call 712-432-6616. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for social media for details.
Mike Colby, welcome back to your turn. We just spoke with the folks from Long Term Care Partners, and a reminder that the Long Term Care easy open season, easy enrollment, ends next Friday. So if you want to get in and be asked only those 4 or 7 questions as opposed to 40 for underwriting later on, that's the time to do it. We're going to be talking now with Steve Watkins. He's editor of the Federal Times. Steve, thanks for standing by. Steve, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
We got you, yes.
Okay,
thanks. Steve, thank you for coming in to bat cleanup here. There's so much stuff going on the Hill. I just thought I would give you the floor and tell us what you're working on there at Federal Times, what you've got in the paper, and how things are looking.
Sure, yeah, lots going on, as you say. Well, just this week, Monday, we saw the Obama administration come out with a new executive order and plan to reduce efficiency, waste, and fraud, creating basically a government-wide oversight board similar to the Recovery Act oversight board called the RAT board, standing for Recovery, Accountability, and Transparency Board, that has actually been quite successful in checking waste and inefficiency in government spending in the stimulus bill. They're going to expand that government-wide. Part of that proposal also has to do with shutting down about half of the federal websites. So that's a story we're looking at. And soon, the same day, Republican Daryl Issa, who is chairman of the Oversight House Committee, introduced a bill that would essentially do something similar, create, again, a government-wide oversight board, and also merge a lot of the data that the government collects on where its money goes. So I would expect to see that bill advance, given ICE's position. We have a hearing today going on. Dennis Ross, who heads the Federal Workforce Committee, is essentially putting a lot of pressure on the Postal Service to downsize its post offices and labor force. So there's going to be a lot of discussion about that topic this morning. We saw some interesting memos from OPM director, personnel director John Barry, recently, just last week, he issued two that basically would tighten the rules for certain raises and awards, that is, performance awards for federal employees and also within grade step increases. Basically, he's saying to agency heads, look, these only should be going to very high-performing employees. Also, of course, there was a big scandal at the VA concerning sexual assaults, almost 300 in recent years at VA hospitals. There was a hearing Monday that where Congress is really stepping up the pressure on VA to get a handle on that and tighten up security and so forth at the VA facilities. And then also for feds, there's a new Republican bill that actually from last week that we're keeping an eye on that would impose 10% cuts in the federal staff. And we've been covering in drips and drabs kind of how various agencies are already downsizing, and we've seen that already with GPO, Government Printing Office, the Agriculture Department, the Postal Service, Social Security, and others. So there's a lot going on, as you point out.
Well, and when you're talking about the within-grade raises, I think Federal Times first reported, you got the information from OPM that in, I believe it was 2009, whether it was calendar or fiscal year, doesn't matter, but in a 12-month period, that only something like 737 people were denied within-grade raises out of 1.2 million. And, of course, not all of those 1.2 million would have been eligible in that particular year,
right,
but possibly half of them would have been. And so that's not a very high rejection rate.
Yeah, it's far less than 1%. And so clearly that's not going to cut the mustard. And that certainly prompted, I think, Congress to get involved and also OMB to come out with these new guidelines.
Well, the Washington Post yesterday was speculating that some of these things that the White House is proposing are really sort of, I guess, like burning, starting a small fire to prevent a forest fire from spreading, that these are kind of preemptive, and they want to be able to go to Congress and say, look, we've got a good handle on the government. You don't need to be as draconian some of the things you're planning to do. Do you think that's the case?
I think that's probably a fair assessment. I think it's worth noting that quite a bit of what came out in the executive order and in the announcements Monday are things that the administration has already been doing. The Government Accountability Initiative is something that came out a year ago. A lot of the one of the aspects of the executive order was essentially to highlight the role of the chief performance officer and how he's supposed to work. That is Jeffrey Zients, the deputy director at OMB, and how he's supposed to work with the agency heads to reduce inefficiency and mismanagement and so forth, which it basically was part of his job description when he was created. So a lot of that is already in play, so I think that's correct.
I got a call from a retired, longtime OPM employee who really was deeply involved in the personnel, the HR side of it, and he said this. It's well and good for the director, John Barry, to come out and say that only give these raises to people who deserve them. But he said the proof is in the pudding. When it gets down to the trenches, will managers have the guts to deny raises to poor performers, and will agencies back them up when the employees come in and file charges against the manager?
I think that's exactly the right point. And you know, in our coverage on it, we talked to the Federal Managers Association. The president, Patricia Niehaus, basically said something similar that federal managers need some more training and guidance on how to go about this. And I think that's correct, because what we're talking about here is really a culture change, and that's certainly not easy in the federal environment.
The things that I'm still hearing most from people are possibility of buyouts and to a lesser extent early retirement, and the dreaded change from the high three to the high five rule for figuring retirements. And as you pointed out last week, that the high five, while it's tops of many people's list, and people are wondering if they'll have time to retire this year before it goes into play, but you're saying this is not a real effort so far.
It doesn't seem to be. I mean, we haven't seen a bill that would actually implement a high five. It hasn't come up in the budget talks. And I think a chief reason for that is that the savings that would come from it are relatively pretty low. For instance, you know, the really where this took steam was in the White House Deficit Reduction Commission, the Simpson-Bowles panel commission, and they estimated that it would only save $500 million in a single year. 2015 is the year they were using, $5 billion through 2020. That's not actually a lot of money when you compare it with some of the other initiatives on the table, such as the higher contribution to the first pension.
That's right, and that's the one that would increase it from 0.8% now to 5.8%, which would represent a permanent reduction in take-home pay.
Yeah, that's correct. It would essentially be a 5% cut in pay.
And that's real, and that's out there. And the other one that you pointed out that I think is not on a lot of people's radar scope is this proposal to change the way the consumer price index is calculated, and which would make for a permanent reduction based on the current formula. So every year the CPI would be less than if it were under the current formula, and that over time would be compounding in reverse.
Yeah, that's correct. So, you know, it's the figures I've seen basically say that, and they call it the chained CPI, consumer price index, and that essentially would lead to approximately a 1 percentage point decrease in COLA adjustments each year. But as you say, over time, that has a cumulative effect and could add up quite a bit.
Well, it's kind of like being the lobster that's put in the pot and slowly boiled.
Yeah.
People really wouldn't notice it, and even over the years, they wouldn't know what they were missing.
Right, exactly.
But they would be missing a lot. And then I guess the other one is this proposal, which I gather is very serious, to raise the federal employee and retirees' contribution rate to their health insurance. Right now, they pay about, on average, about 30% of the total premium, and this would boost it up. And I know NARF, National Active and Retired Federal Employees, is watching this closely because they have both active and retired members, but they're concerned that this would take a major bite out of people's income and also maybe drive them into less expensive and maybe inferior insurance.
Yeah, and that's a real fear, and it's that could you know, for a lot of feds out there, that could have probably more effect than any of the things we've seen on the table, including the pension contribution, because we're talking about, you know, healthcare costs that have been increasing at, you know, everyone knows at a rate of, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10% a year, and that's just simply unaffordable for anybody.
So if the premium goes up 7 to 10% every year, and your share of the premium goes up dramatically each year until what? I guess it could. Have they figured that it could be as much as half of the premium?
I forgot if they have a. I think that's the figure that I saw over an extended amount of time, that it could get up to that level, and obviously that's considerable.
Right. So if you think you're paying a lot now, just wait. And where is that again, in congressional pecking order?
That's still a bill that's pending. I don't have the bill number with me, but it is something that we're keeping an eye on, and it is a serious proposal.
Unlike the high five, which has not been introduced, this one is out there and working its way through Congress.
Yeah.
All right, very good. The Postal Service, is the six-day week or dropping Saturday delivery, is that still a serious consideration?
Certainly the Postal Service would like to see it a serious consideration. So far, Congress hasn't given any indication that they're taking it seriously, but it is something that the Postal Service, even this morning, is calling for in its testimony at this hearing I discussed on the infrastructure. But you know, we have not seen anyone in Congress really taking this up, so I'd be surprised to see this pan out.
Well, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, it seems like the potential of furloughs was a big deal, not a government shutdown. That was even more scary, but we're talking about furloughing feds for 10 days or something like that. I haven't heard any talk of that lately.
No, I haven't either. It's interesting. I think that's died down. I think I think a lot more has happened in the area of hiring freezes.
You know,
more severe payroll kind of
preemptive strike.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Steve Watkins, Federal Times. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for keeping us posted.
Good to be with you.
And we'll see you here next Wednesday. Have a good week and stay safe.